I am the guest moderator today, Kirk Brigeman, Chief of O'Fallon, and I am here on behalf of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police and Team Hochberg, David Hochberg, who is our sponsor. So if you're looking to buy a home or refinance, 855-56-DAVID, David Hochberg is your guy. So today we are going to be talking about police, social workers in the police departments. And we have with us an expert panel today. Returning is Chief David Byrd from the DeKalb Police Department. And then we have also Megan Nolan, a police social worker with DeKalb, and a few other things. And we'll get to some introductions in a second. We have Jerry Sillick, who is the president of the Association of Police Social Services. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And then we have Amy Bricker, who is a police social worker for Highland Park. Is that correct? Fantastic. Yes. So, you know, if you won't mind, this is going to be a pretty fantastic topic here because it is so timely and there's so much that's going on in law enforcement. And over the past few years, it's been the hot topic, social work, and we need to have social workers and stuff like that. So we really want to get down to the brass tacks and figure out what this social work and police is all about. So if I want to go around the horn and introduce Chief Byrd, you want to introduce your social worker there?
Sure. Like I said, of course, we have Megan on here from the DeKalb Police Department, who has been doing an amazing job here. So our social workers, we have Megan, we have two other social workers who rotate between the DeKalb Police Department, Sycamore PD, and the DeKalb County. So, they spend the majority of their time in DeKalb, as you would imagine. We're the biggest city in the county. We're the busiest department in the county. So we have a lot of mental health issues that we deal with on a daily basis. And Megan has been, you know, and her two counterparts who couldn't be on today have been extremely impactful and helpful to us as we co-respond to mental health issues and just calls of service and where they can impact the call in a positive way. So a lot of times, you know, we vet these calls ahead of time with a police officer and we'll immediately call Megan or one of her counterparts to come assist us and making sure that we, when it's safe for them, we'll back out of the role and let them handle it. Because truly, some of these calls of service do not require a law enforcement presence per se. As long as we can make it safe, and then we can turn it over to the social workers, and then we can kind of back out of it based on their interpretation, their assessment once they arrive as well. So very excited to have Megan on. Like I said, she's very knowledgeable, worked for Elgin PD a little bit before she came here. So, you know.
Glowing recommendation there. So, yep. Megan, tell us about yourself and, you know, what your qualifications are. What do you do?
Hi, thank you. My qualifications would be my long run of many different areas in my past that brought me back to social work. In my family, social work has kind of been the main object for everyone, and I tried to steer away from that. But then I went and ended up studying under an individual, Temple Grandin, at CSU. So she has experience with autism and other things, which then when I decided to go into the family business of social work, I was able to kind of adapt how I review situations and on-scene situations in a different way, and to kind of analyze it not just for what's being told to me, but also what I'm experiencing in the scene environment. So that's kind of, I initially wanted to go into the school area, but a friend of mine said, maybe you should try something that's out of, you know, your network when we went in to do our field research. And I decided to apply at Elgin Police Department for their field work. And once I did that, I fell in love with it. And so I was able to work with a lot of different individuals that became mentors, and then furthered my career in what I do now. And I have the opportunity to work with all the different chiefs and within the sheriff's department also. So I have a lot of different experiences, and each department is completely different on how they manage their situations. So we really have to, we actually kind of have to be like chameleons. So not just on scene to meeting the client where they are, but we have to be chameleons within the departments that we work and adjust to how they work and what their environment dictates. Does that help a little bit?
That does help. Yeah, great. Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and where you work and sure. How you got into police work, how you got into social work.
Well, I started my career in social work and child welfare in schools. And I actually just retired in June with over 30 years in a school as a school social worker and the counseling department chair. And I had the opportunity there to lead our threat assessment team and also work with the local police social workers. So when I retired from schools, I knew I wanted to continue in crisis work and working with communities and being part of a team effort. And this position really fit all of those. So I'm probably the newer social worker here on the panel in terms of police social work. I just started in August in this position, and I love it. It's a great opportunity to work with the officers, but also I really enjoy the services and the interactions with our community as well.
Fantastic. And you mentioned something about a threat assessment team, and just hold on to that thought because I'm going to get to that later, because that's going to be something we want to talk about later in this episode about what a threat assessment team is. And I'd like you to explain that to them. Before we go, let's get to our final one, Jerry Sillick. Jerry, tell us about yourself and what do you do for police social work?
Hi, I'm actually in the Park Ridge Police Department now. I've been here since 2016. Before I got my master's, I had some experience with adults with disabilities, working with that population. And then also in like a juvenile detention center, I did some work there. I'm originally from Indiana, went to Loyola, and then kind of just, I stayed in the area. And my first position post master's degree was with the Lincolnwood Police Department. I was actually brought in on a contract through the fire department, and the need was for like elderly frequent callers for people who had fallen or needed additional help in their home. And the police department quickly recognized that a social worker was in the building because our departments were connected. And they kind of just gobbled me up and brought me over to their side and gave me more work. So I worked really on a contract between the police and the fire department. And then they hired me part-time, where I stayed there for 15 years. And then I started in Park Ridge specifically for their police department. But of course, it does go across to the fire department as well. I am by myself here in the department. I love it. So I've been over, I'm on my 24th year. And then in addition to that, you mentioned when we started that I am the president of the Association of Police Social Services, and that's about 90 police social workers from a variety of counties surrounding Cook County. We have Will, Kane, Kendall, Montgomery, Lake, DuPage. We have a lot of different, over 50 departments, averaging about 90 police social service workers right now. So yeah, thank you for having me today.
Yeah, great. Jerry, you mentioned you've been working for 24 years mm-hmm. as a police social worker. Mm-hmm. Now,
yes,
I would venture to say that the majority of the people listening to this, police social work, social workers and police is something that's been hot topic the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years or something like that. 25 years in police social work, this is not new, correct?
Oh my gosh.
Tell me about that.
Okay, I'll make it as quick as possible. The Association of Police Social Services actually began in the 70s. There has been police-based social services in Illinois since I think it was about 1975, where the University of Chicago did a pilot program, I want to say, with Wilmette and Niles, I'd have to look up exactly, maybe Evanston, I have it right here, but they brought in police social workers back then, and it has grown from then. So we have a really great state-based model, to be honest. When a lot of different states and communities went into crisis with the co-responder and the mental health services adding in workers, Illinois was in a really great place because really we have a nice model that's been implemented for a very long time. And as you can see, it's down in DeKalb with Megan. You know, like we have had for many, many years in-house police-based services. It's just now, like you said, it's a spotlight position, so there's more attention drawn to it.
So, Megan, tell me what a typical day looks like for you as a police social worker. We're all pretty familiar with police officers. They get calls, they respond, they take reports, they stop cars. What does a police social worker do on a typical day?
Well, to kind of tie this in a little bit with what Jerry was talking about, when I was talking about before my family, my stepdad was actually he was the first forensic psychologist that worked with for DuPage County that responded with officers. So not just in the, you know, in the sheriff's department, but with officers and within the jails. So I kind of, as a kid, would listen in on information and take it in and find interest in it. And so, you know, with what we do on a daily basis, I learned real quick that what we do is different every single day. Some of the main things that we do have that is kind of consistent is that we do come in and at some of the locations, we'll do searches under behavioral health or mental health subject or check for well-being or, a suicidal subject or anything under those areas. We'll pull the reports and then we'll contact individuals so that we can see what we can do in our background and in our areas to assist them so that we can minimize the calls that we have with those individuals and get them the services locally within our DeKalb County and work with whether it be Ben Gordon Center with Northwestern, whether it be our township, or, elder care services, a lot of different areas within our community to get the needs that they need. And basically by doing that, we're reducing the call volume within our 911 dispatch, and then also reducing the number of calls. Like with officers, they could maybe over the weekend, they get, you know, four calls to one resident. Well, then we'll take that information, we'll evaluate it and look into how we can help those individuals to kind of find the services that they need to reduce the call volume. Does that make sense?
That makes 100%. That makes sense, definitely, 100%. Chief Byrd, what type of value do you see in having a social worker in your organization? Have you seen a decrease in the number of calls? I mean, who handled these calls before you had a social worker?
Yeah, well, of course, law enforcement did. When I came on the job in 89 with the Illinois State Police, we handled all these calls. And the sad part about it was we didn't have the training to do so. We really just used common sense to best our ability and tried to get through these situations when truly we needed a professional to handle a lot of these situations. So that's the biggest impact, having someone in the building who is knowledgeable and, is a professional and is someone who has had extensive training with dealing with mental health issues. So to be honest with you, that's the biggest impact for us. And like Megan said, the fact that we can reduce our call volume, with their expertise, goes a long way so we can concentrate on really, in progress calls that we really need to tend to. We have violent crime in DeKalb that we need to spend and concentrate on a daily basis. So when Megan and her two counterparts are here, they really help us by handling some of these calls for us that we don't have to respond to or that we have to respond to in a limited way. And we can get back to some of the more, pressing issues, which is violent crime in DeKalb, which, we've had the ability to reduce here. Even our calls of service with behavioral issues has reduced very slightly, but we're getting there. We're trending in the right direction. is truly because of the impact of our social workers. So just to put it in a nutshell, they're extremely impactful for us, and we appreciate everything they do on a daily basis. And it's a game changer for us.
Jerry, I've got another question for you and Amy. I'm not ignoring you. We'll get to you. I just had a question that came up so there's several different models that we can use for police social workers, right? Co-responder models, and then maybe just referral models. Can you talk about that and maybe what's being used throughout the state that you know of or what you use?
Well, I can, you know, not trying to speak on behalf of all the departments. Before I go on,
you're the president. You're the president. You have to speak in
time. Okay, I will. Good point. I do want to go back to Chief, though, and say, like, just kind of off of his comments, what is really important about our position and the ability for us to function and actually complement the police department requires a supportive administrative staff. And so having a chief behind you in this position makes the biggest difference. So I just wanted to say thank you to the chief. I have a wonderful chief. I've always had great chiefs. And so, you know, the buy-in on having a civilian social worker come into a police department that hasn't had one before is not an easy feat. You know, we're tough-skinned people, and we're ready to, we hit the ground running every morning, ready to do what we're told and ready to learn every day. And to have the support of the command staff is essential to the success of this position. So thank you, Chief. In regards to the different types of models, you will see Naperville is a great example. Naperville has about 4 social workers, I want to say, that and each of them functions on a different role in a different day. So they will have people, a social worker who's in a car literally for the shift, wearing a vest, who is co-responding the entire day. Naperville is very large. Naperville has that need in their community. Parkridge, here's another example. I don't need to do that. It's really dependent on the community's need. So will we all co-respond? Yes, but in different ways, dependent on what the chief and our supervisors want us to do. I'm not comfortable walking into a call that's not cleared, you know, police language, of the violence until the police have gone in first. So I go on in and I respond at the request of a supervisor. And then with our experience, all of our experiences in this field is we know when it's time to go and we know how to communicate so that we're complementing the police department, not being the police department. So every department has, a different way and a different version of implementing pretty much the same services. And so it depends on the size of the department. Our larger departments, like Megan over there with 3 or 4 or 5 workers, can offer counseling. They can do, you know, ongoing community support in their offices where somebody alone like me might be crisis and only crisis support services until we link people into the community. So to answer your question, all of us are similar, which is why we network with the Association of Police Social Services so that we learn from each other and we can custom design what the role of the social worker is supposed to be in each unique individual department. Does that answer your question?
That's excellent. Brought up a great point about how every department, every community is different, and there are different needs with every department. Yeah. You know, I've talked to my friend Stan Reno, who's the chief down in Carbondale, and they deal with a lot of mental health issues down there, and other people deal with other issues in other cities. So, you know, Megan, you said something earlier that caught my attention. You said you had to be a chameleon, and you know, and I look at, and I think, when you look at starting a police social worker program and you look at the differences in between police officers and social workers, they're kind of on different sides here. You know, I mean, we all work for a common goal, but they don't always think the same ways. You know, social workers are a little bit more touchy feely, if I could say so. You know, I mean, they're in tune with things, and sometimes our police officers are not as. So, Amy, you're new to Highland Park. How is that integrating within a police department? Tell me about that. Like being a social worker in a police department with a bunch of usually men, you know, men, women, but they just have, there's different views. Tell me about the challenges there or what you've experienced.
You know, well, first of all, I feel like the department's been incredibly welcoming as a new person. And I've seen our officers interact with different community members, and most of them, if not all of them, have the crisis intervention training. So they have a lot of skills around mental health. I do think that there's a culture where it's, you know, kind of bragged about how little sleep you might have or what you're managing. So talking about mental health is not necessarily part of the culture. So trying to bring that in. And so that those are some of the things I've noticed. Also, we're in a place right now where we're preparing for the trial for the 4th of July parade shooting. So working with our resiliency division to also think about officer wellness in an environment where maybe not everyone wants to talk about that, but to provide services in ways that meet a variety of needs and approaches.
So that brings up a good point. And Megan, with you and what you do, or Jerry, who is a police social worker? Who is your clients? Is it the community? Is it the officers? Is it the staff? Is it both? How do you, what, tell me about that. Somebody.
Do you want to take it first, Jerry, and then I can fill in?
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll have a similar answer. It's the community. We are hired to be a community-based service. You know, for law enforcement, police officers, public work, village hall, finance, they grow on you and they know we have confidentiality. So it is not uncommon and it's welcomed for a law enforcement officer to walk in and talk with me. So in order to sort of make that a little bit more organic as well, the peer support teams now sort of foster our role as part of it. We don't lead it, but we are included sort of just to help with it. And so we can become peer support team members, which is a nice way too. So if somebody walks into your office, they could be talking about something else regarding work, or they could be talking with you about their personal issues. But yeah, they come in. They do it when they need to, our employees. But yeah, it is a community-based position. And my referrals, which again is different because different departments have different sizes and numbers of social workers. I'm sort of a city employee as well, in terms of like finance can send people who need financial assistance to me. The fire department can refer, you know, anybody that they go to that they feel like needs help. Public Works has made referrals to me before. People walk in. So there's a lot of different ways that people come to me. But yes, that's Megan, if you want to take it from here, I don't know.
So I'm similar in that is that when you asked earlier about how officers or deputies, because I work both areas, how they can kind of take us in and be accepting of us, right? Because you're going to have skeptics no matter where you work, right? And, you know, sometimes I'll get the, is she going to analyze me? And I'm like, I don't have time to analyze anyone ever. So my door is always open to everyone. But the thing is that for individuals that may be hesitant about what we bring to the table, my job is to kind of support them and slowly give them a positive aspect of how we can help. And so sometimes that takes time, right? And that's okay. It's kind of sometimes when that time progresses, you develop more of a rapport so that when you do go on scene with people, then they kind of know how you work and you know how they work. And I do, Jerry, there are other locations that have that one person that pairs up. And I would love that at some point. We don't have that yet here. A lot of our officers or deputies are CIT trained. So that's good too. And when we're on scene, I like to be able to also take my thoughts and everything with the officer and bounce it off of them. Because when we're on scene, I'm focusing on the client or the individual or what's happening, and they're making sure that I'm safe. So they understand so many other things that I don't understand as a social worker. And so they're able to view that. And I learned so much from them on scene along with that, whether it be fire, whether it be officers, deputies, or even, you know, paramedics. So I feel a million times safe when I'm with them.
Perfect. And, you know, it's worth saying that we had a social worker intern in our building for a little bit. And I can tell you just by watching this social worker, like you say, you learn things from the police department. We learn things that we never look at as police officers. And I see the value in that. And when I look at a social work program, I think it comes down, and correct me if I'm wrong, it comes down to just being able to trust that person that's within, embedded in your organization, that they're going to do what's right for your organization, what's right for your community. So many times, especially down in the southern part of the state where we don't have social workers, we refer people to outside agencies and we never find out what happens with them. And I'm assuming that when you have somebody in-house, embedded social worker, that there's follow-up with those officers. Chief Byrd, tell me that. Do you find that with your officers that there's a greater level of trust in that when they bring that social worker, when they bring Megan a problem, they say, hey, I've got this issue and I just don't have time to deal with it because I'm running call to call. And I can't make sure this person's on their meds, or I can't make sure this person gets services. Are you finding that they have that trust with Megan, or is she not trustworthy?
No, of course.
Tell me the truth. I'm looking at it right up.
No, believe me. That's exactly what they do. And they feel even more just, you know, comfortable having someone there who can handle the situation. Like I said, we're a very young department. We have officers who haven't really even experienced a lot of life on our department. We have 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds. It's a lot they don't know about the world that they live in, even though they're police officers. So they're learning so many life lessons on a regular basis, every tour, every shift. So believe me, they're quick to refer some of their calls to Megan because they know. I mean, they just haven't been on this earth long enough to really be able to assess situations. It's the truth. I mean, I'm just being honest about it. We're, you know, heck, I started when I was 21 years old. I mean, my frontal lobe wasn't completely developed and I was carrying a weapon. So, I mean, it's the truth. I learned a lot through trial and error and this job is a lot of that. I mean, you know, and to be honest with you, when we have our social workers arrive, and we do allow our officers to make that call. I think Jerry had mentioned, sergeants, making it. We allow our boots on the ground officers to request assistance if they think it's necessary. So we allow them, we give them that latitude. And at the end of the day, there are some occasions now, and maybe all the social workers can speak on this, where our officers actually, have such a great rapport with some of the, you know, mental health issues that we are dealing with, the people we're dealing with, that sometimes they end up handling the call because the rapport is just so strong with the officer, because they've been doing it either on the weekend, overnight, or even prior to us having social workers, on the call. Can you guys even speak on that a little bit? How sometimes the officer's rapport is so strong that sometimes it's more impactful to have them, at least in the short term, deal with the situation. Of course, not long term, but just during that call.
Sure. I think, well, I want to go back. I know I keep going back every time.
That's fine. Keep going back.
You said the word embedded. And I just want to just to magnify that word. It's very important for the relationship for the success of the job to have an embedded social worker. Again, I mentioned when I started that I came in through a contract, and being there under a contract and not in the station on a regular basis delays the ability for the officers to connect with that worker to build trust. And 99.9% of this job description is to establish trust with your coworkers. And we are civilian and they are sworn. And there's a difference in that. We don't carry a weapon. They have to have our backs. We have to have their backs. We have to follow their lead. We have to work off each other. We are a complement to the department. And so in doing that, it requires trust. And getting trust means we need to be present. not one day a week, not 2 days a week. We need to be embedded. And that is a model that we don't disregard contracts. They're very important. But we'd like to see that as a step to having the mental health component inside of a department. In regards to what we were just talking about, we have no magical wand. This is my answer. I go to work every day and learn. And that's the success of this position, is walking in saying you don't know everything. Because if you walk in, even after 24 years, if I walked in as a know-it-all, I would fail. And so when I get called out to the scene at the request of a supervisor, there are times when I'm less effective than the officer. And it's not my job to take the lead. It's my job to compliment. It's my job to see what's going on and what is needed. If there is a rapport with a law enforcement officer at the scene, I can be a support to them, but I'm not there to pass interference and take over a call. And so any officer that has a great rapport on that call, that's the goal. That's what we want. We want to be a complement if needed. And we can pick up when they're done, like the chief was saying, like when they're done with that call, we're there to keep following up. So that officer has established the relationship and moved that call. Got a resistant person, like an example, a resistant person that didn't want to go to the hospital. That officer established that rapport, made it no use of force, no hands-on, de-escalated the person where they actually cooperated on the call. My job then is the follow-up. My job then is the family support. My job is to make sure that they're discharged and they know where they're going so that they have services, and to make sure that they know we're there for them. We're not judging them. They could call us 50 times. We're there for them. But I hope that answers your question.
No, it did. And it's exactly the posture we take here. And we believe in that. We believe in that, you know, turning it over to a social workers for long-term, like you said, follow-up. We are in DeKalb, unfortunately, we deal with a lot of domestic situations. Can you guys, maybe all three of you, have talk about dealing with, you know, those aftermaths of these very stressful, sometimes very violent situations within the home, and then with the other piece being that, you know, children, you know, how you guys deal with children after dealing with some of these very serious situations. Sometimes even people, we just had a young lady who lost her life from domestic, and we always, you know, we try to, you know, of course, make sure that our social workers are looped in with the, you know, because we need the children to have the assistance that they need to get through such a horrific situation. So maybe you guys can just give us some thoughts on that as well.
Who wants to take that one?
Megan, you want to kick it off?
Megan wants to take that one. She's being voluntold. So Megan, do you do a lot with domestics? Or is that a different thing? Because I know that sometimes there's social workers that will deal with mental health, and then there's other ones that will deal with victim advocacy. Is that the same thing?
So in our office, in our world, we work with all of it. So whatever comes in front of us, we try and figure out the best needs and meet that individual where they're at. That's kind of like a social worker term, is that you try and meet the individual where they are on that day. Just because 2 days ago it may have been in front of us, we, you know, restart and look at where we are today. I can say a little bit, and then you guys can definitely jump in right after me. But when it comes to the domestic side, we do use our resources that are local. We have Safe Passage. And so we try and also use, you know, kind of a soft handoff in some areas with Safe Passage. And then also I've been able to use other organizations within our area too, to kind of get the needs that they are. It could be all different areas that they need help with. But when it does come back to the domestic violence side of things, being able to be self-aware of, okay, is the other individual within this person's life, are they aware of the fact that now they've come to the police station, right? Are they monitoring where they are? Are they, you know, being safe with how they're handling situations outside of here, and how can we keep them best safe and also get them the needs that they have. So that's areas that we have to be very careful with. Do you guys, Jerry or Amy, want to come in and explain too, like on areas on how you guys are able to assist?
I think this is an area where the association...
I can't hear Amy.
Hear a little bit. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
You're really low.
How about now? No. Okay.
You know what, Amy? I'll take over and you actually keep talking.
Check your check your audio at the bottom of your screen and see the little thing and see where your audio is coming in at. Your microphone. You might have switched microphones.
Yeah.
And we can edit all this out, so don't worry.
Yeah.
Would it work if I signed out and signed back in?
Yeah, you can try that. Try signing back out and signing back in, and then we'll go with Jerry and we'll edit this out. Don't worry. It's all good.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want me to answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. There are a lot of departments that have major, major strong victim advocacy programs. Mount Prospect, Elk Grove Village, those are two off the top of my head. They have workers that are designated specifically for all of the domestic violence calls. So the victim advocacy piece goes hand in hand in a lot of the communities with what Megan was saying, the mental health and all those call responses. We do soft handoffs on civil issues to our local agencies. The majority of police-based services in the Association of Police Social Services are also victim advocates. So on all criminal arrests of any violent crime, we are activated. And we are making contact with the victim. And so we do the court advocacy. We do write the orders of protection. We have amazing relationships with our state's attorney's office, our public defender's offices, our judges, our clerks. We have specific courtrooms for domestic violence in Cook County where we meet regularly so that the process is smooth for our victims when they are going to court. So we do have a lot of good victim advocacy services. We follow them through the court cases, whether they're misdemeanors or felonies. And the purpose of that is, for me, my position on that is that when an officer is working on that arrest, those long reports and hours and multiple responses to the same home, my responsibility is to ensure that that victim understands their rights and that the hard work that the officers did is actually used in court, and we get them to attend and work with the system, whether the defendant needs substance abuse treatment, mental health treatment, anger management, domestic violence counseling, you know, really to try and get to the root and the cause of some of the issues that are in that home. And so that's why we really try to get some cooperation with the prosecution if that's something that the victim feels is would be helpful for them. So there's a lot of education on the process of a criminal arrest and what an order of protection means. And then we hand, like Megan said, the decision is theirs. And we never walk in front of them to make the decision. We walk next to them or we walk behind them. That is their choice. It's always their choice on what it is they want to do in court, but we are there for them to educate.
Fantastic. Amy, are we, do we, can we hear
I
you
don't
now?
Know.
We can.
It works. Hey, yes. On off always works, right? I'm sorry. I just step out, but, this is where I feel like for me as a newer police social worker, the Association for Police Social Services was really helpful. I met with a number of police social workers and learned about their different expertise, the way they run their programs. And that really changed my practice in terms of court advocacy and support for domestic violence. So I'll go up to the courthouse with a client, sit with them, talk through what the process is. So they feel knowledge is power. And so they have more information and they know what to expect. And then also being patient as they have questions and they might need things repeated multiple times and explained. And then the officers are there for the beginning of the case, but there's a lot that happens after, in terms of maybe a response to something on social media or questions about the order of protection that they have ongoing. So there is a lot of contact, but I've also partnered with the officers to serve an order of protection. Let's say someone who's in another state and we're having trouble having that happen, or working closely with the state's attorney's victim advocate, helping to explain the process. Court language is a whole different language. And so navigating that can be really confusing and overwhelming.
Fantastic. Thank you. So we've been talking a lot about reactive. You guys are getting the calls, you're reacting to something that's already occurred. But Amy, you have some stuff going on up in Lake County, up in Highland Park, with a new approach to threat assessments. Can you explain what those are to me? Now, has Lake County's got a new approach to threat assessments, and then Highland Park also has an initial threat assessment program? Are those two different things?
They're two different but related practices.
So when we look at this, you have those things, and I know Highland Park is a few years ago went through a terrible 4th of July shooting, and that's going to trial soon. So when we look at these things and the threat assessments, is this something that kind of spurred that to try to figure out where you can be proactive in this? Tell us about how that works with your group that you're working with.
Sure. A larger piece is Protect Lake County, which is made up of police chiefs, community organizations. They're working with university, which I apologize, I don't remember which one right now. But
is it Northwestern? No, it's not. Never mind.
No, I think it's University of Chicago. But they are creating a group where different members come in. They'll have a three-pronged approach. You can have a threat assessment that you bring to the group as a member for a case review to have feedback from different mental health professionals to make sure that you there aren't additional steps that you could take in terms of protection. There's going to be a training component of it, education, and then also a resource component. So at this point, they've been building the language and the structure for it. And it is literally just starting with new members.
So when we start talk about a threat assessment, are we talking about hard objects? Are we talking about threat assessments on what a particular person might be? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah. So an example would be a student makes a threat, posts a threat at a school that's reviewed and assessed by the school, the SRO. Might investigate that or detective, and then the department or a school could bring a case forward and make sure that they've taken all the necessary steps. Are there other resources or community resources that we could connect them to? So that is the model with Protect Lake County.
So, and that is the key to, you know, getting it early, preventing something tragic from happening in the future. And you, right, as a school counselor for 30 years, are pretty well equipped to be part of that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we would work, if there was ever a threat, a student posted something or wrote about something, we would pull together the threat assessment team. The SRO was always a member of that. And we would have two mental health professionals assess that concern and then come back together as a team and debrief and make an action plan for how to proceed. So it's been nice to continue with that here. In our department, we just started a new program called Threat Incident Case Management, where if there is a threat assessment that occurs at a school, I will be doing follow-up. And we're looking at this as prevention at a 1 week, 1 month, 6 month, 1 year, checking in with the families. If someone's under emotional distress or they're struggling, it's an opportunity to reach out, offer additional supports, maybe educate a family about some red flags or concerning behavior and connect them to resources.
Fantastic. Jerry or Megan, tell me about something. Do you guys have some proactive initiatives that you guys are working on in your area, or things that are maybe not referrals? Is there anything that you guys want to highlight that you guys are doing?
Well, nobody's as good as Highland Park when it comes to that. And this is a great example of how a community, how a police department will design and utilize their social workers for the specific needs of the community. So that program is going to be one of a kind. And being part of the APSS, Amy's going to eventually develop this and be able to share it now with over 50 different police social workers so that we're not reinventing a wheel. So Highland Park, we're going to borrow at some point her final product on this and her stats and her pros and cons and build off of it, make it stronger. And if another community needs a program like that, we can network with each other to get that information, which we do a lot. So I'm glad you guys are doing that. And I'm not surprised because Highland Park, the Highland Park Strong is a real thing. For preventative in Park Ridge specifically, I'm in a small community. I mean, there's 39,000 people, but I have 60 sworn officers in this department. So that's, in the scheme of things, it's very large. Some social workers work with 150 police officers, right? So some work with 30. So it really depends on what we're capable of doing. And for my position, obviously I said I've been here 24 years, so I'm able to kind of, make some things easier, and I have an eye for things. And so it's all about kind of watching a call, reading through some of the blogs that the officers put out there on addresses, remembering names, taking good notes, following up on stuff that's not criminal. A lot of times things come in that are not criminally, they're not arrestable, they're not criminal offenses, but like some departments will title it domestic trouble. So it hasn't risen to the element of a crime, but there's just some things about that call you need to keep an eye on. And so reaching out to say, hey, I want you to know that I am here if you need anything, is like bringing awareness to this position, because people are like, what? I didn't know the police had a social worker, because traditionally we respond to police, criminally related or arrestable offenses. So those things that fall underneath the cusp of a criminal element are things that I follow up on. So mental health call, even if they de-escalate it, even if they walked away, even if it's a domestic where they restored peace and someone agreed to leave, I'm on the phone with them, just checking in to say, hey, I'm here if you need it. And perfect. That's how we handle it in Park Ridge.
Perfect. And that is actually, I apologize, that is proactive. Even though you're getting a referral, you're being proactive in doing some of that. Megan, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, we have a unique situation. So, sometimes you do have a social worker that's embedded within the police department, right? With our situation, we're actually funded by a couple different areas. So we're funded by the DeKalb Mental Health Board and then the DeKalb Township and the city of DeKalb, then along with Northwestern. And what Northwestern brings to the table is the program at Ben Gordon. So we are part of another crisis team outside of just our police departments. We're also a part of the Ben Gordon team. So within that crisis team, you also have an organization called the Living Room. So say I'm on scene and we have a situation that an individual needs much more time and much more time to be able to talk to somebody and have that long conversation and be evaluated. We can then also transfer that individual to the Living Room to get much more current services and to meet those needs right away, because it's 24 hours. So that's kind of whether or not we're on staff here as police social workers, or maybe it's nighttime and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, officers can always use that too. So, it's kind of a tool in your toolbox. We also have the 988 and, the 590 program over there too, which is the crisis. And so they'll go out on mobile crisis. So even though we are embedded in here at the police department and at the sheriff's office and at SPD, or, all the way out in Sandwich, for the county, we also have these other areas that we're attached to. So it's really nice to be able to have both areas and be able to follow up with people even when we've seen them on scene, and then we know that they're going into the hospital. And so, you know, we'll go with them to the ED and, you know, talk with our coworkers at the ED and get the needs that they have at that moment. So it's really kind of that soft handoff that continues, and then we follow up with them.
Perfect. Perfect. You know, Jerry, I think we probably need you to come to every city council and talk to them about the needs of a social worker within their communities. So my question to you three is, there are chiefs that listen to this and command staff, and there's a vast majority of police departments in Illinois do not have social workers. So what would be your advice, or what would be the number one thing to keep in mind if a department was considering starting a social worker program? You know, what, you know, if they were considering starting something, what would be the number one thing that you would tell them to before they do that? And I'm going to start with Jerry.
Well, what's funny is interesting, not funny. What's interesting is that departments that have, with the growth inside the association, APSS, the departments that have police-based workers are adding more. And then there's departments that haven't even put in one. So, which is interesting because it just sort of speaks to the fact that when they get one, they get it. And they know that they need more. Until they get one, they don't get that they need it. So it is, it's actually interesting. So how do you start one? What do you do? So our organization has a committee, and like for one of the things, we made a QR, and it's going to link to a program development packet. And this is a tool for chiefs to look at, what does it mean? What do they do? What are their salaries? What benefits do they get? It's just a real walk. It's like a actual walkthrough of how to implement a program. And so any chief that's interested, we provide them with this information, and then we sit down and talk with them about like, what are they capable of? And really the first thing that comes up for all departments is the budget. You know, we don't have the budget, and there's not a ton of grants out there for this position. There are some, you know, but they have to be in by November 1st. And if they miss it, and then there's stats. But so really to come up with the money is what you hear everybody say. Once they actually put the money in the budget and they see the value of the position, it never becomes questioned. I can honestly say the last time I heard, or the conversation of questioning our position, was like in 2004 and 2005, when the economy took a huge hit and budgets and police departments were in crisis. We did see a trend, a couple police social workers lose their positions because the departments didn't have it in the budget and it wasn't prioritized. I don't think I would ever see that right now, because it is such a specialty, a specialized and much needed position. So to answer your question, the group we belong to has answers for chiefs. And we have information on what does a contract look like? What does part-time look like? What does full-time look like? What, you know, what do you want it to be? How much would you have to pay? What do other departments say about it? What are their general orders? You know, so we have a lot of information to share with everybody.
So how would they get that information? If right now, if they're listening, tell me where they would go.
Well, right now we have, they could go to our Facebook page where all of our information is there. It's called the Association of Police Social Services. Anybody is, our board members are listed on there, and then our email. And so that's one of the links to, and then also we're going to the 100th Club, which is regional, it's up here in Oak Brook. We're going to be there in March, and we have a QR there that's, we're going to be sharing. And then we're going to go hopefully to the Illinois Chiefs Association and have the QRs for all the chiefs so that they could look at this program development information. Anybody can contact me directly at my office. I mean, I could tell you my number now, or we could just at that. Do you want
they can go to the Facebook page. That's fine.
Yeah, the Facebook. Yeah,
that's perfect. Perfect. And so I know we're running. We've got so much. I could cover this for another hour, but I want to be cognizant of your time. So if we can finish off Does anybody have anything else you want to add? I'll go around the horn. You can add anything that you kind of want to talk about with social workers. If you have a success story that you'd like to share, something that happened in your organization, you don't have to give names or HIPAA violations or anything like that. But if there's something that you want the general public or the police departments out there to know about your program or what something great that's happened, I'd love to hear something. So let's start off with Megan there. I'll put you on the spot. And you're muted, but that's okay. Go ahead.
No pressure, right?
That's all right.
Exactly. So when you were talking, when Jerry was talking earlier too, I think chiefs should really look at, or any individual looking to add a social worker, is kind of, what is your why? Why do you want to do this? Because I do that with everything. You know, when I go on scene, or the bigger picture of what I do is I think about, like, what is my why with this scenario? And how is it going to play out? I've had individuals that have been really, you know, consistent fix. And then I've had individuals, the hard ones, right, where you've got to really put in the effort and be consistent, and then see the outcome maybe 2 years down the road for that individual, but also be patient through the whole process. So that sometimes can be hard, and be able to do that. It, you know, you have your moments as a social worker, and you've got to reevaluate what route you're going into. I've had individuals that I've worked with that, you know, have had pretty good turnarounds. One of them was an individual that was in psychosis, and it went really quickly. And so, we had to figure out a way to get them, you know, to the hospital in a safe manner, and then also get them, they kind of, you know, decided not to go. And so they ran off. And so you have to then figure out what is the next route to go and keep going with that individual, and also work with their families if possible, if they're available. And so with that individual, we were able to work with their family and get them the services that they needed. And so they're doing really well now. One other individual, you never know what is going on with someone. You never know their history. And it's really important to kind of look into what is their history. And if you're in doing that and taking the time, you can then basically, one individual, it's always hard for me to talk about, but it's important, is that I could never figure out, they would flip their oven at their apartment. They would flip it. And so we would get calls from the apartment complex, like, why is this happening? Why are they doing this? And the individual wasn't able to communicate it. And in figuring out and learning of their power of attorney, I learned that at one point when they were a child, they were placed in the oven as a toddler. And so in having that knowledge and going back into history to figure out how then I could help that person going forward was really important to take the time to get there. And so they're now in a really good place, and they're doing really well, and no That's longer awesome. Flipping anything.
That's awesome. Chief Bird, any final thoughts, any success stories from DeKalb? Any, you want to yell at Megan for anything that she hasn't done?
No. I only yell at people who need to be yelled at. So, and at the end of the day, it's definitely not Megan, and it's definitely not her two associates here who are not, they do a fantastic job here. To all three of you, I just want to thank you all for really changing the dynamic of law enforcement, because it truly has. I mean, for someone like me, I've been on this job 36 years. I've seen over three decades of policing. So I've seen changes. I know how things used to be, and I have something to compare it to. And I will tell you, things have, this is such an impactful resource for law enforcement. I talked to the officers at roll call. They all will testify to the same thing, that they really appreciate having the assistance of social workers, especially when we do a dual response. It's just so important to them. And like I said, I just couldn't thank you guys more. I agree with Jerry. You know, once you have one social worker, I think you will go forward and say, hey, this is a resource that was untapped for me. And now that I see the impact that it has, I need to increase that footprint. So I totally agree with you. And, you know, I get it. Things aren't free. I understand that. Believe me, we make a point of adjusting our budget to make sure that we can have our social workers in the city of DeKalb because they are making that big of an impact. So thank you all. I appreciate you.
All right, Amy, closing words, success stories, anything you'd like to share?
Sure. I would just say that as a police social worker, knowing about the resources in the community is really important. And sometimes those victories are quieter and smaller. I had a client call me who was sexually assaulted in another country and was receiving legal documentation in a different language than was her first language, and was using like Google Translate to try and figure things out. So I was able to link her to someone at our local legal aid clinic who could read that language and help her understand it. And so it's a way to support someone and is making a difference for her. And then I think also as a police social worker, doing those follow-ups to see if that service is helping, is it working, has she engaged? Because sometimes people just need those check-ins to stay, to get connected and stay connected. Those can be really meaningful.
Perfect. Jerry, any imparting words of wisdom or success stories for yourself?
You know, I'm gonna give a success perspective that's a little bit different than that individual, like what we do, because every day I feel like, you know, we come to work, we love our jobs, right? Every day is different. So a success for us on a daily basis is so different. But I'll say, like, one of the things that I feel like this week, I'll use as an example, that's been really successful is my ability to sort of help another agency that's in crisis. You know, to have a community near us going through a crisis with one of their officers who is now a fallen officer, to have that peer support, to be there for them, to cross that line and to reach out and to be in touch with their social workers, say, we got you. We're here to help you. What do you need? And to help that team with resources and just to have that collaboration from community to community to community, that's been really wonderful to see this week, and that how willing everyone is to step up for peer support. And another success is we have 12 new officers, 12, you know, watching our FTOs, our field training officers, bust every day, bust in their butts to train these guys. That is a success in this department, to see the camaraderie, the spirit in the job, the, you know, new blood trying to work and learn things. I mean, I feel like that's all of us wrapping around that person to say, this is what we do. This is what we do. How are you doing? How do you like it? Hey, let's go get lunch. Like, so I, from the macro perspective, I feel like that's been my success in the last week.
Well, thank you very much. From a personal story, I first heard about police social workers like 4 years ago at an ILACP conference when you guys presented there, and you had me at hello. It was pretty fantastic. It's taken me a few years to try to get to the point where I can add one. So I am going to be posting a job opening soon. So I would expect all three of you to apply to come down to O'Fallon to start the O'Fallon Police Department social work program down here. So I definitely see the value. I 100% agree that it's, I love that comment that you said, it's 99.9% about establishing trust, trust with the community, trust with the officers, and that's how you work forward. So I want to thank all of our panelists, Chief Bird, Megan, Jerry, Amy, thank you so much. This has been another fantastic edition of Behind the Badge Illinois, brought to you by Team Hochberg and ILACP. If you're looking to buy a home or refinance, call 855-56-DAVID, 855-563-2843.